Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. It is becoming a thing. It is the Friday edition of Sports. So we get to see the entire week and we get to react. And some people, like Zayd Shakir over at the Golden State Warriors attorney's office, they get to listen because those guys are busy and they can only listen Saturday and Sunday. Shout out to Zayd. But Zayd is not here. You know who's here? My guy, Mike Xavier Krivchenko. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, what's going on? Happy to be on. Happy Friday as well. Like you said, I love Friday episodes are my favorite because so much goes on during the week. Sometimes when we're recording on a Tuesday, while we're recording, some things are dropping, and you know it's nice to get a nice roundup of the week.
I'm one of those people that like on Saturday and Sunday, I really try to unplug. So it's nice to be able to record on a Friday. The week is over. We can really relax. I'm not, as I used to do in the past, fitting it in between conference calls and sitting in my office with like a Zoom post-it note, like do not disturb. This is nice and relaxing. I'm in my sweats. I got the chimney going in the background. All good. Mike, last week we recorded this episode, we had breaking news on the NCAA Tennessee front. We have an interesting development, the NCAA's reaction to the Tennessee NCAA news, and that dropped via a letter from Charlie Baker. So we will talk about that. So on the episode today, we're going to talk Charlie Baker. We're going to talk further Tennessee NCAA fallout. We're going to talk about, we'll say, a brief update in Dartmouth and EA Sports. So we're going to hit the college landscape. And then I think two interesting stories in the NFL world. I think there was an F1 story we could have covered if we really wanted to, over with Horner and the Red Bull investigation / acquittal, but we'll save that for another day. Jerry Jones paternity test. No, we are not talking about that yet. But we're going to talk about the new Tyreek Hill lawsuit and the guilty plea of one Chiefs-aholic. So a little bit of a busy episode, but we'll get it done. Reminder, podcast sponsored by Themis Bar Review, the top bar prep company in the entire galaxy. Shout out to Themis. Shout out to our contact, Rebecca Petrelli. Shout out to Themis for sponsoring the New York Law School soccer competition. And shout out to Pace Law School for winning the New York Law School soccer competition. Mike, you see this shirt?
Oh,
see
yeah. What this says? I saw it when you came on.
Pace Law. This is my wife's school. So I got to support Pace. It's all good. Okay, Mike, before we get started, this is a big episode. We got a lot of good topics on this. I'm excited.
Yeah, no, this is huge. And, we got into the off season of the NFL and football in general, but we're still rolling with the NCAA. We got March Madness, March 1st. It's starting today. So I think it's, I think it's appropriate to still cut into that. And, these are some big stories. The NCAA is changing a significant amount over the past, year that we've been covering this eight to 10 months. And it's, I'm excited. I'm excited to cover a little bit of this with you.
And we're going to keep this episode pretty tight. We'll try to keep this to like a mean half an hour, just give or take. We did 25 minutes last week, and I was told that was good. People don't like to hear me talk. They like to hear nice and concise and sweet. So we'll try to keep it tight, and we'll get rid of the BS. Okay. Let us hop right into it. So the news hot off the presses is a letter directly from the tippy top of the NCAA, and that is one Charles Baker. So I'll give people the highlights, but the letter was obtained by Yahoo Sports. It essentially is the NCAA's response to what was last week. We covered it. The preliminary injunction that was granted to the Tennessee Attorney General over the NCAA. The NCAA's, it called into question the NCAA's ability to enforce any of its rules. So certainly we've been on the show back in June of 2021, when the NCAA versus Alston case dropped, where Justice Kavanaugh very much said in the concurring opinion that the NCAA is not above the law, and it warned the NCAA of impending antitrust repercussions if they were to continue to act in a way where they were stifling their employees, I'm putting in quotes, their employees or the players' rights without justification. So as we sit here today on March 1st, you were right, we are beginning a March Madness season. Charlie Baker's letter essentially says, we are going to pause these investigations into schools. I'm gonna read this. It says, in response to this latest order, and this order being the preliminary injunction, the Division I Board of Directors directed NCAA enforcement staff to pause and not begin investigations involving third-party participation in NIL activities. There will be no penalty for conduct that occurs consistent with the injunction while the injunction is in place. Okay. It keeps going. I just want to read this part. The judge's order referring to the Tennessee case also upheld three specific NCAA policies that remain in effect and will be enforced by NCAA staff. One, the prohibition on pay-for-play payment for specific athletic performance. Two, the prohibition on direct institutional payment for NIL. Remember that one. And the quid pro quo requirement. Okay. So, Mike, Charlie Baker has spoken. He's waving the white flag on basically conduct looking into collectives, but he's still saying essentially you can't have improper pay for play. Schools can't still pay athletes, and you need to have some type of quid pro quo. What do you think, Mike? You think this is a full white flag, partial white flag, or you think this is the NCAA gearing up for battle?
I think it's the NCAA gearing up for battle.
Interesting.
I think it's a sit back, kind of see the school's reactions, see what they let them show their hand, and I think adjust accordingly. The NCAA doesn't know what to do right now, I think. So I think they're gearing up, going through with their legal team and what they're going to go. Because, like you said, the government, United States government getting involved and kind of calling them out on the practices that they've had for decades upon decades is huge. And now I feel like the schools have gotten a lot more freedom over the last, 2 years. I think this is, kind of gearing up and watching what the schools are going to show them before they really come down with any serious repercussions, like you were saying.
Now, I said this, I did a Zoom with like Open Doors, one of the big, we'll say NIL vendors or collective vendors, whatever you want to call it. They're not really a collective vendor, but been involved in the space for a while. Those are set up by Blake Lawrence over at Nebraska. Go Big Red. And I said that that there were witnesses to this call, some of which are listeners to Conduct Detrimental who can vouch for this. But I said the most likely outcome of the Tennessee case is that the NCAA pumps the brakes. If we go back to January, remember, it was Florida State punishment, Florida State investigation, and Tennessee investigation in back-to-back-to-back weeks. And we did a podcast, and I remember calling it, is this the start of the enforcement era? Now, the second Tennessee Attorney General filed this lawsuit and now gets this preliminary injunction, the NCAA is not going to waste resources fighting these investigations and trying to find punishment if there is an inkling that the next state, let's say they went after one of my schools in New York, right? If there's an indication that the New York Attorney General is going to file the same case and win, that would be a waste of time for the NCAA to even start an investigation. So yes, that makes sense. Why I wanted to focus on the second number, and Mike, I tend to agree with you. The NCAA is digging their heels in. This is not a full white flag. It's a partial white flag to the extent of the collectives, but I think they have to. But they're trying to say that this holding is very narrow. And we, the NCAA, we still have power. Mike, it's like they're flexing at themselves in the mirror. They're like, we're here. They're like doing the Ray Lewis dance. They're like, we're still here. We're ready to fight. We're ready to go to battle. What I want to point out, though, is that second prong that Charlie Baker said is still in effect. Quote, the prohibition on direct institutional payment for NIL. Why I pause there. There are very smart people that are very keyed into the NIL space. I have conversations with collective people, sports lawyers, who a lot of people in our sports world. And I spoke to someone in the last month, and they raised that concern. They said, well, if the NCAA is going to lose to Tennessee and the NCAA's power is stripped away completely for them, you could have a world where some school makes the decision to just pay their athletes directly, but they don't wait for the unionization question. They don't wait for a state to authorize revenue sharing, that a school just says, you know what? The only thing that makes this illegal is the NCAA, and the NCAA has no more power. So we're going to get rid of this. We're going to take the power away from the collectives. We're just going to do it directly. We're going to centralize all this. In theory, like New York is a state that it says that the school can help facilitate, identify, and support, compensation for athletes. So the New York state law seems to allow a school to assist in that. NCAA rules don't say that. So the NCAA is trying to pick their battles, so to speak. So they're only doing the Ray Lewis dance when it comes to like policing the schools, but it looks like they want to let the collectives off the hook. It's very small in the grand scheme of things. Like collectives existing is not stopping the NCAA from being enforced, but that's Charlie Baker's letter. Charlie Baker is saying, we're still here. We're not going away. I'm still getting paid a lot of money. I'm not going away anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, I know Tennessee was, you know, preparing for that future where they were just going to pay directly rather than the NIL. So they were building the board of trustees, they approved it today, I believe, to create that nonprofit foundation to set up for a fund for salaries. So they're still, kind of in that, I think, mindset of going through with that. I mean, they made $200 million last year in the 2023 fiscal year. They have the money to do it and the money to fight the NCAA. I mean, the numbers that were coming out of what they've spent on their legal fees. I don't know if you saw that article as well, but they were paying
How much?
$11,000 a day to fend off NCAA, basically, in this last.
Let's do the math on this. Does it say how many total hours were billed? Can we reverse engineer their billable rates?
I don't know, actually. I got to find that.
Let's do a control F for the word hours. As you try to parse that together, 11,000 a day. Let's extrapolate that out to a full month of fighting. That gets us very quickly into the 300,000/500,000 range. That sounds like the money. I don't have this offhand, but I think you and I talked about this. The numbers that the PGA – the lawyers defending, representing the PGA in that antitrust lawsuit bought. It was like $100 million. And I'm like, it was in that world. Some of these, listen, I've never been a big law guy. And I know we have some listeners that are big law guys. You know, big law firms charge a lot of money. And I think somebody asked me like, you know, why do big law firms charge so much money? And I'm like, well, 50-story buildings, if you have the entire building, you gotta upcharge those rates. So people can steal this if they want. When I'm competing for clients with big law firms, I'm like, our firm's 100 lawyers. I think we can deliver basically the same, if not better service. And we will not charge you 10X. Some of these lawyers charge a lot of money, but especially this NIL world, I think it makes sense. Not that it ever makes sense to charge that much for legal fees, but listen, if you have that specialty rate and you have clients that are willing to pay for it, by all means, sometimes, and I know this is not what you asked, but sometimes there are clients like Major League Baseball, the NBA, or these big institutions that need that level of big law firm because they have so much money. And they're like, if this goes sideways, we have big law coverage, like a little bit of CYA. So people's like, you know, listen, this went sideways, but not because of the decision I made. I hired the most expensive law firm in the country. And big law firms have made a business on that model for years and years and years. So credit to the big firms. I'm not knocking them. But you know, everyone's got to eat. So big law firms, small law firms, everyone's got their piece in the legal ecosphere. Okay. So Tennessee, Charlie Baker, we hit. I did this Zoom recently for some, compliance people and in the college sports space. And we did an hour on the fallout of Tennessee NCAA. And they asked us to wrap up and they're like, final words. And they go, keep it to one sentence. And Mike, you ready for this line? I said, tip of the iceberg, .. Dartmouth. And I'm like, this is just NIL. Like, we're not talking about unionization. We're not talking about collective bargaining. Like, this is very small potatoes compared to what's to come. Speaking of, Mike, what is the latest on Dartmouth? We're on Dartmouth watch over here. People are on the bubble watch. No. We're on Dartmouth watch here.
Yeah, I mean, it's changing legitimately every hour. Yahoo Sports, who covers all of the sports business so well, came out with a couple articles today, actually, about Dartmouth's response to all of this. On Thursday, they filed a 17-page motion to suspend the March 5th election, which was going to be whether the 15 men's basketball players can unionize or not, and whether the date will remain open for the ballots as basically that legal process plays out. But they also filed a 25-page motion asking the director to reopen the record, claiming that she basically that Laura Sachs, the NLRB director, misapplication of the well-established legal principles under employment law is the quote, basically saying that all of the different times that schools have come and given all of these, attempts to unionize these players in the past, that, you know, the precedent is set there that they're not employees, and that this becoming the first time that this has actually succeeded, that it's just completely misapplied. But, just a day later today, they pretty much denied that. So the NLRB completely denied Dartmouth's motion to reopen the record. And, it's moving forward for Dartmouth players to actually unionize. And, that path is there for them to start collectively bargaining and, maybe changing a bit of college athletics. And I think it ties into the Tennessee thing as well. I mean, with players getting paid and, I think these two stories are much more significant and much more tied together than I think a lot of people realize.
Ivy League Athletic Association, and I'm hearing Dartmouth basketball players are working on it. So Mike, just so this is a question genuinely, is the March 5th voting date still on, or is that now that being postponed?
No, as far as the latest updates, that's still, still there. They denied pretty much anything from Dartmouth to try to block that or say March 5th is still there.
So I have a proposal. I'm okay moving that date back slightly because March 5th is cool. But what if that vote happened on March 15th? Then we could have like the Ides of March. Mike, history buff. What happened on March 15th? The Ides of March.
You got me. Ides of March.
Oh, don't Google it. Okay. That was March 15th, 44 BC. The day Julius Caesar was assassinated in the Roman Senate. So that could be pretty poetic. If it happened on March 15th, the death of amateurism, so to speak, that would be pretty cool. Once upon a time, yours truly was Brutus in the school play of Julius Caesar. And I got to kill Julius Caesar. And my friend, Evan, who does not listen to this podcast, was like, A2 Brute. And I'm like, yeah, you're dead. I killed you. That's my little history buff. Ides of March. Okay. Good stuff. We'll keep an eye on Dartmouth. We'll hit this really quick, and then I want to get over to the NFL. Obviously, we told you guys we'll keep this tight. EA Sports. EA Sports is back. I was with my law students today, and I was explaining to them, I'm like, EA Sports, big news. And I had one of the students gave me a look that said, like, why is EA Sports back have anything to do with sports law? And what I explained is that, listen, this is 10 years to the date that the game came out. I had explained to them the Ed O'Bannon case, and I said, this is a big movement. College sports is changing, not just like because Professor Luss says it's changing and all these cases are kind of moving and we're getting closer to a new NCAA. I'm like, this video game was gone for 10 years and it's back. And that'll tell you some landscape of the monetization that can be done, for better, for worse, on the backs of these athletes. So this is a game that's going to generate tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars for EA Sports, the NCAA, and some of these athletes. I say some of the athletes for a reason. Mike, there's no formal revenue sharing program, but do you have the numbers on what the athletes get for their involvement in EA Sports college football game? 600 is right, Mike. A plus. 600 is right. There's some people saying that 600 is small potatoes, but then you have to remember, like, there's a lot of athletes in these games, right? It's, there's 100 plus schools, so 600, give or take. But again, if you're going to give money, like in these ambassador contracts to the top tippy-top athletes in the sport, I'm okay with it. So EA Sports, like if you give $1 million to Quinn Ewers and everybody else gets 600, like, or Quinn Ewer level athletes, that's fine. If you put the Caitlin Clark video game out, women's college basketball, and she's on the cover, give her a little bit of extra coin. I'm cool with that, if as long as you carve out for those top guys, but and gals. Okay, Tennessee, Charlie Baker, Dartmouth, EA Sports. We're closing the book on the NIL portion of this episode. Mike, it's now your turn. You get to pick your poison here. Two of these lawsuits. I guess one is a lawsuit, one is a criminal case. One is just starting, one is beginning. Tyreek Hill, Chiefsaholic. Mike, which one do you want?
I'll take Tyreek Hill. I think, you know, we can end on a little bit of a, not that criminal cases are, you know, ever hilarious, but the Chiefsaholic thing is just something else. So, you know, end on a more positive note. Tyreek Hill, though, I mean, it's, I feel like this is the never ending journey throughout his entire football career. You know, he's a Hall of Fame talent, you know, NFL wide receiver. I mean, genuinely one of the top receivers in the game every year. But, you know, off the field, it's just been really interesting and difficult for, I'm sure himself and, you know, his legal team from day one. You know, when he was at Oklahoma State, he was arrested for domestic violence. He was dismissed from the program, in 2016, he was drafted by the Chiefs, as many know. And, you know, despite all the controversy, he was still, drafted, promised improvements. It was a, you know, significant story at the time that, you know, he promised that there would be a lot less issues in the NFL. Come 3 years later, there's in 2019 an even more, you know, huge story of whether or not he was involved in his child breaking his arm, his pregnant girlfriend being hit. Like, you know, there was things going on in 2019 that were terrible, you know, to deal with. And, you know, he was investigated for child abuse, investigated for that. But no charges ended up being filed. They found that it was an accident, and the NFL never suspended him. So, you know, the NFL, and as far as I know, has been pretty hands off in the Tyreek Hill off field incidents. Last year, he had an altercation at a marina that many people posted, and it was going viral on Twitter. No charges were, you know, pursued after his settlement. But now, I mean, this is. This is just, you know, I mean, it's a little weird almost, you know, I feel like of a story, but Sophie Hall claiming that they broke, that Tyreek Hill broke her leg during football drills at his mansion. So that was interesting, obviously, just, you know, saying that he broke. Oh, the professor's got a question.
Question. What was this individual's name that has now sued, Tyreek Hill?
Sophie Hall. A self-described actress.
Oh, model. Self-described actress influencer. Model. That's what I was looking for. That's pretty relevant to the story, I would think.
Yeah, social media influencer. I mean, you know, there's a lot going on with her career that she's, you know, self-describes as. But she's accusing him of battery, assault, negligence, and IIED, intentional infliction of emotional distress based on...
Okay.
What
before I'm ready to opine on this lawsuit, Mike, this is going to sound pretty crazy, and those OGs of the podcast will know that I dabble in a lot of weird shows. I watch my wife's shows. I'm very familiar with what goes on with the Kardashians. One would say I keep up with the Kardashians. One would say that I'm very aware of what goes on in the Real Housewives universe. I'm aware of this, and once upon a time, no longer. I was involved in the comings and goings of the Bachelor universe. I was very aware. Now, there used to be this concept on The Bachelor. I imagine there still is. I don't watch it anymore. Where if you would go on this show, win, lose, or draw, get engaged, as long as you existed on the show, your social media followers would go up, would go way up. I would think, and I don't have the numbers, I think there's a website called, shout out, they're not a sponsor show, but shout out Social Blade, where you can actually check. Oh, Mike's nodding. That's what it's called. You can actually check what someone's follower count has grown in a certain amount of time. Now, we're not here to slander anybody, but I can almost guarantee, I've never heard of this person. Like, and part of my world is to understand influencers and TikTokers. That's part of my job. We represent someone in our firm. Never heard of this person. No idea how many followers she has, and certainly, I actually don't care. I will guarantee you, this woman's social media followers have exponentially increased because of this lawsuit. Exponentially increased. Her videos are going around. People are showing this on Twitter. They're showing her video when she says she's hurt. This person is a social media influencer. She's a model. We don't need to say anything else. I have no interest in looking at this person's account. But I'm already dubious of this lawsuit already based on this. And maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe I should say innocent, proven guilty. And I'm happy to go in with an open mind. But just on its face, I'm a little bit dubious of the structure of how this is set up. She flies out to his house with the son, and they're doing football drills in the backyard. Mike, how old is the plaintiff in this case? Do we know?
29-ish? Let me see. Okay.
So the story is, and my understanding of this lawsuit, that this Tyreek Hill had a football camp. The wife was sending her son out to be a part of the football camp. Mike, in what way, shape, or form does the mom doing drills with Tyreek Hill, I believe at his house, how does that have any relevance to, like, how does that have any legitimate purpose to anything, like, at all?
Yeah, that was my first question.
It's a good question.
How did we get there? What were the events now, leading there?
Now, if I am going to engage in football drills, what I would call like the way this was set up in the complaint is an offensive defensive lineman type drill. And she's alleging she's a tall individual. Tyreek Hill is not a tall individual. He's a rather short guy. And Mike, by the way, you are 6'2", 6'3". How tall are you, Mike?
6'1", but I appreciate that.
6'1"'s pretty tall. So if you are going into battle, and how tall is Tyreek Hill? Like 5'8"?
Yeah, I think so, around there, 5'10".
Okay. He's not 5'10". He's whatever. He might be 5'10" on the depth chart. He's not really 5'10", though. He looks whatever. Doesn't matter. But if you're in a football drill, offensive and defensive linemen, and both people are consenting to this activity, and tall woman runs into Tyreek Hill, okay, there's a collision here. That's, Mike, what we would call, say it with me, the assumption of the risk. Assumption of the risk. There's no lawsuit here, right? This is not like Tyreek Hill took a baseball bat and hit someone over the leg, or Tyreek Hill drove a car and hit someone else. I heard of another lawsuit. My friend, I actually asked him to come on this podcast. He couldn't come on it. He's representing a plaintiff who is suing another celebrity for, a lack of a better term, dropping furniture on someone's head. Like, those are acts that the victim doesn't consent to. The woman in this case, the social media model influencer, consented to it. God forbid. This is my opinion of the case. This is a nonsense case, in my personal opinion, and one that the plaintiff is actually increasing her follower count and social media profile by filing it. So that was my big takeaway. I'm like, this is an interesting lawsuit. I don't think anything less of Tyreek Hill for this case. And I think it's one of those cases where she demanded a lot of money. Sometimes you settle those cases because you're afraid of the bad PR. There's a lot of other things that Tyreek Hill has done that make me think less of him. This is not one of them. I am surprised this result. Well, I'm not surprised this resulted in a lawsuit, but I credit to Tyreek Hill for not caving on this one. I think he's going to be able to successfully defend that. From what I know thus far, that's my opinion on this one. At the Conduct Detrimental Resorts World and Casino, I'm going to put, and I, by the way, the house always wins. So I've never lost on one of these bets. I'd put Tyreek at he might settle the case, but if he took it to verdict, that's like a -405. Tyreek Hill, Resorts World and Casino. You could take the social media influencer at +325, but the house does like Tyreek, -400. It's big bet, heavy favorite.
No, I like that. I agree with you. Yeah, it's, you know, Tyreek Hill, like you said, has, and I've mentioned all of those incidents in the past. He's, you know, one would think if you're going to do something like this, he's the one to go after. So, you know, I guess we'll see what comes from it.
Okay, last but not least on the docket, we mentioned we would talk about Chiefsaholic. That is that crazy super fan that dressed as a wolf, but was actually an alleged bank robber. I don't think we have to call him alleged anymore because the man took a plea. More on the plea in a minute, but the viral part about this is the part that I think, as you mentioned, we could take some comedy in. The Chiefsaholic lawyer is definitely I'll call him an honorary member of the Sports Law Hall of Fame. I think he's I don't know if he's of the standard, Mike, that we would put him on this podcast. I'm not quite sure he's risen to that level, but he gets an A for effort. He looks, can I say this? Is this mean? He looks a little bit like McLovin. Is that fair?
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, he does. But the credit to him, he's putting sports lawyers in the headlines. Okay, I'm going to read his statement. People, statements going viral. If you remember, he had another viral statement a couple months ago. This lawyer, Matthew Merriman, delivered a statement on the courthouse steps full of football metaphors. I'm going to read it. I'm sure most of you have seen it. For those that haven't, I would recommend popping onto Twitter and watching the video, but I'll read it for those, and I'll try to deliver it as well as he did. Today was a big day for, they say, Xavier Babadou, but that's the Wolf's Chiefs of Holland guy who was robbing banks. From the beginning of this case, the government has been blitzing, and Xavier's pocket was collapsing. But today, Xavier stepped up into the pressure, and took responsibility for his actions. If I know anything about Xavier, and if the Chiefs Kingdom knows anything about Chiefsaholic, it's that even when Xavier was under pressure and he stumbled and fell, he did not let his knee touch the ground because he knows there is still hope. Today, Xavier stood humble and repentant before the eyes of the court and the eyes of the Chiefs Kingdom. Xavier loves the Chiefs, yada, yada, yada. He only hopes that you will rally to his support. Okay. So this is the part I want people to focus on. When Xavier was under pressure and he stumbled and fell, he did not let his knee touch the ground because he knows there's still hope. Mike, that is an odd statement to be giving when you've accepted a guilty plea and you have given up hope and you have given up your right to a trial and you're taking a plea. Your knee very much hit the ground. You were very much tackled before the goal line. You are done fighting. So you're not fighting for additional yards. You have been tackled. Conduct Detrimental, Resort World, and Instant Replay Services have determined that what Matthew Merriman said was disingenuous because he very much took a plea of guilty. And that's why I think I'm comfortable saying that he is not an alleged bank robber. He is an admitted bank robber. On that point, Mike, what is the actual plea that he's guilty of? Is there jail time involved here?
Yeah, guilty to one count of money laundering, one count of bank robbery, one count of transporting stolen property across state lines. I mean, he robbed at least one bank in seven different states, stealing more than $800,000 during his bank robbery. Now he's facing up to 50 years in federal prison, and he's been ordered to pay over $500,000 in restitution.
What I think, Mike, I think he had a speech that was probably ready for him to fight and go to trial, and because this speech doesn't sync up at all with the actual result of the case. So I don't think people quite realized what he was saying. They thought he was going to fight for more, but he's not. He took a plea of guilty. So that's us trimming through the noise and the nonsense of an entertaining courthouse speech to actually get to the truth. And the truth is he is not fighting. He's accepted a plea of guilty. Does that sound interesting, Mike, that the lawyer on the courthouse steps actually said something the exact opposite of what had happened? Does that sound at all possible?
I love that. Yeah, I love the way that you think of it as well. It's like, yeah, he had knees prepped. He grabbed the wrong one on the way out of the office and, decided to read. I agree. It was a fun case while it lasted, and I think he's going to be away for a little while.
So, yes, I think that's a good place to end this. If you hear a voice in the background, my youngest daughter, Sloane, snuck into the video feed. So she is here.
Ellie.
She's looking for her toy, Ellie. Okay, you can go find Ellie. Ellie, where's Ellie? I don't have Ellie. Go get Ellie. You can keep this in. Ellie, Mike, what animal do you think Ellie is?
An elephant.
That is a really good guess. And bring them in. Bring them in. Bring them in. What do you think? So Sloane is about to bring in Ellie. She's about to bring in her other stuffed animal named Moo. Guesses as to what animal Moo is.
A cow.
Great guess. Mike, she likes you so much. She's bringing them in. Here she comes.
There we go.
Do you want to show Mike Moo and Ellie? Come here. Show them. Show them. Come here. You want to show everybody Moo and Ellie? Okay. There's Moo and Ellie. She wanted to show you.
That's awesome.
Which one's Moo? You want to show Moo? And which one's Ellie? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's Moo and Ellie. Okay. Mike, I know you have to get out of here. Sloane, you want to say bye to Mike?
Bye.
She says bye. Okay. Okay, that's a good place to end this episode. For all of us here at Conduct Detrimental, hug your kids, hug your wife, and study for your finals. Okay, that's that. I think covers everybody, and hug your husbands too. Everybody, hug everybody. That said, we will put this episode in the books. Mike, thank you as always for joining. Always a pleasure to cover the world of sports law and a little bit of dose of kids, right, Sloan?
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, that'll do it for us here, and we'll see you next time on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.